ComicBookBookBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Monday, September 18th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and a half, probably, or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we kick off another week here on Bang the Book Radio. Two guests coming your way today. The first, Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible, for our NFL Week in Review and Monday Night Football Preview. Lions, Giants coming up tonight. Lots of stuff to talk about as we come out of week two of the NFL season. We got five teams that we're going to focus on here in today's segment, talk about some of the problems that they have, and also talk about some good things that are going on for those specific teams. Second half of today's show, Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com with our college football first look segment. Plenty of stuff to talk about, obviously, as we head into week four of the college football season. We'll break down some games in depth as well, including TCU, Oklahoma State, Michigan, Purdue, Central Florida, Maryland. We got a great show coming your way here on Bang the Book Radio. Before I bring on today's first guest, a couple of things I want to mention. The first, over at bangthebook.com, you can read about the $25,000 winner in the DSI Streak Challenge. Pick 21 straight outcomes in a row, $25K in cold hard cash. Congratulations to him for that, but you can read about that over there at bangthebook.com. Some new content up over at the website as well. My college football power ratings for week four have been posted. I've also posted game previews for both of the Thursday night games on the NFL and the college side. We've also got Major League Baseball stuff going on over there. NHL team previews from Parker Michaels. He's still rolling those out. The Atlantic Division completely done, so you can check out all eight of those. Lots of great stuff going on over there at the website. So make sure you're taking advantage of everything that we have to offer over at bangthebook.com, including our matchup data section, those contests you can play along with, just tons of stuff to check out, look at, read, analyze. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. All right, without further ado, we'll bring on today's first guest. That is Mr. Joseph Everett from NFL Draft Bible. Joey, how are you today, man?
Hanging in there, despite the loss of the great Bobby the Brain Heenan this weekend. I mean, it was a good weekend of football, and definitely looking forward to week three in the NFL.
Definitely a good weekend of football. And at the top of today's show, and I want to do this at the top of the segment here, because Joe Thomas, 10,000 consecutive snaps. I mean, obviously this guy was going to Canton anyway. There was no question about that. But, you know, this is a guy that's played for an organization that has been in a massive state of disarray pretty much the entire time that he's been playing. Nobody would have taken a second look if at some point this guy said, you know what, we're 2-13, my back hurts, I don't really want to play this game. Didn't miss a snap. 10,000 consecutive snaps. I mean, this is unheard of, isn't it, Joe?
Oh, especially at his position. As you mentioned, back issues, foot issues. How many times have we seen tackles or guards getting rolled up on from behind? So we have to knock on wood and you know, thank the people upstairs, because Joe Thomas has had some great fortune, but he's taking care of his body. He is also just happens to be a tough SOB too, but just as far as what I do, Adam, I mean, he is the carbon copy, man. He's the prototype. It's like, that's the mold. He set the bar so high, and yeah, it's this. What else can you say about a player? I mean, I don't think we'll see his like again on this perspective of snaps and consecutive starts. It's as you said, unheard of is the right word, because I just don't see it happening again. It's right up there with Brett Favre and his amazing streak, because I just don't see those consecutive games being broke. And it's not like he's just hung on. He's still at the top of the game. That's what's probably the most impressive. There has not been a fall off. You stack up the top tackles, top 10, all the years he's been in the league. If he ain't first, he's first name I'm thinking of when we call roll.
No, absolutely. And I've never actually met the guy, but I've got some friends that work for the Browns, and I have some friends in the media that have interacted with him a lot. And I have never heard a negative word uttered about that guy. Not once. Not even anything that could possibly be construed as a negative word. I mean, he just seems like the quintessential pro, you know, a guy that you'd want to have a beer with, or in his case, with his picture on Twitter yesterday, a nice glass of whiskey with. But Man, I just wanted to mention that at the top of today's show. I know you're a big guy with the trenches, and to see a player like that at his level, to have that kind of longevity and consistency is just absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, as you mentioned, it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Just good guy from Wisconsin, loves his fishing, loves his bourbon, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No, absolutely not. I mean, doesn't everyone want friends with a guy that loves fishing and loves bourbon and play football? I mean, hey, it sounds like a good guy to talk to me. All right, let's look at this Monday Night Football game here. The Detroit Lions, New York Giants. Giants, 3-point favorites here with extra juice pretty much across the market. Interestingly enough, Bovada, pretty much the only one sitting at 3 flat right now at minus 110, which would imply that we do have a little bit of a pros versus Joes, sharp versus square, whatever you want to call it, type of split on this game here. Looks like the Giants, a little bit of the preferred sharp side. Detroit, a little bit of the preferred public better side. Joe, what's the biggest key to this matchup tonight in your mind?
It's got to be Odell, his status for this game, and whether or not he's in this. So that's the meat and potatoes of it. But the Giants offense is all about Odell beating people deep. He stops, he starts, he gets loose on all manner of routes, and it's I think a big part of their playbook, too, is that subtle, divisive ways to get him the ball because his teams know it's coming. So that takes so much out of their scheming and so much out of their prep, I'd have to believe. And there's just nobody on the roster with that kind of talent level and skill set. And it's just, like I said, it's hard to put this all on one player, but he's one of the few non-QBs that changed the whole complexion of a team. I mean, I would compare it to Julio Jones being out. It'd be a similar negative effect. David Johnson for the Cardinals right now, it looks like, and then maybe Von Miller for the defense of the Broncos. But you take this guy out of the mix, and they are just literally that one-legged team in a butt-kicking contest. So I'm assuming Beckham doesn't play, and that puts the clamps on Sterling Shepard, Brandon Marshall. I think the Lions could manage with that. And I'm just – the most puzzling aspect of the Giants week one is that Marshall didn't know where to line up. He's, like, communication issues. He didn't even appear part of the playbook at the first half of that whole game, and it's been all offseason why they did not incorporate him. So the big matchup is definitely the tackles. They've been a problem for the Giants. Eric Flowers is likely going to struggle. I don't care if it's Ziggy Ansah. Anthony Zettel actually looked pretty good week one. So that's the interesting matchup to watch there, especially if Odell doesn't play. And then, potential mismatch. I'm very skeptical of Jarrett Davis, his play against, Shane Vereen could get open against him. Paul Perkins, maybe the rookie Evan Engram or Red Ellison. I don't care which tight end. Davis has been getting exploited in coverage, and I just didn't see him as a plus cover guy coming out of Florida. He was more of a downhill thumper, but that's the Lions' problem, not mine. I think that's the biggest matchup on the other side. I think really the Lions, their fortunate part is Janoris Jenkins can only cover one side of the field. So you look at that, Marvin Jones, Golden Tate, I'll take either of them against Eli Apple, Ross Cockrell, DRC, whoever the Giants want to throw out there. And then that X factor the Lions do have is Kenny Golladay came out of the barn just blazing week one for the – I know a lot of our listeners that loved that Mac football probably smiling ear to ear there with Golladay. I mean, he was a star for Northern Illinois, transferred to North Dakota State, and he just showed up. He made those wild plays. He's really long, strider. He's difficult to catch if he gets that clean release. And probably most importantly, Matt Stafford has taken a real shining to the kids. So that's a guy who could be a difference maker for the Lions. But we're talking about matchups. It's the same on both sides of the ball, Adam. Greg Robinson, I'm not sure he's going to be able to handle Jason Pierre-Paul, Olivier Vernon, Romeo Arquara. They've just got guys on Spags' defensive rotation that Robinson right now should not be starting. Taylor Decker's PUP, first 6 weeks, he's not going to be in for a minute. And Robinson won the battle, but that doesn't mean he can handle these. I think Olivier Vernon probably one of the more underrated defensive ends in the league. He can just do it all. Speed, strength, bull rush. He bends well, and that's where the Lions will definitely be in trouble, I think, on the O-line, just trying to stop what Spagnuolo. He just schemes so well, and that's going to be the problem. And then you've got Landon Collins on patrol in the back half. So that's look at this total. I think that's the reason why we're sitting at a 42 number, I believe.
Well, the Odell Beckham thing, obviously the biggest storyline for this game. His status, everyone says he's up in the air, game time decision. He's going to go through pregame warm-ups, see how it goes. I guess based on what we're hearing from some of his teammates, it seems like he's probably going to give it a go tonight. Could be a smokescreen. We'll have to wait and see. But, you know, just him being on the field alone, the attention that he draws from the opposing defense should open up some things for Eli Manning. A couple things I wanted to expand on that you mentioned here, and you know, there are a couple of differences about this game versus the week one opponents for both of these teams. You know, obviously for the Detroit Lions, it certainly seems like Carson Palmer has more issues than what we expected coming into the season. Didn't play particularly well yesterday against Indianapolis, didn't play well in week one against Detroit. Arizona loses David Johnson, who had a lot of touches in that game, so they lost him late. So the Lions still had to game plan for him. Didn't really matter. They did a fairly decent job against him and against the Cardinals offense. It's a similar setup tonight if the Giants don't have Odell Beckham, because you know they don't have nearly as many weapons as they'd like to have. But the one big difference in this game for me from a Giants standpoint is that last week against the Cowboys, you had to worry about the run. You had to worry about the pass. You had to worry about a very good offensive line, even though the Cowboys were a little bit banged up there at the left guard position. When it comes to today, you don't have to worry about the run. The only thing you have to worry about is Matthew Stafford. So I think from an X's and O's and schematic standpoint, this game sets up much, much better for the Giants. And with this line where it is, it's basically saying that these two lines are, or these two teams are pretty much a pick 'em on a neutral. Giants probably getting 2.5 or so for home field there at the Meadowlands on Monday night. I think given the X's and O's, given how these two teams stack up, I do think the Giants have a little bit of an edge because they don't have to worry about that balanced offense on the other side.
You know, it's absolutely right that they're kind of similar teams offensively. Neither one of them can run the ball. So the defense is going to know exactly what to expect. And Spagnuolo, just looking at Matt Stafford, he's got experience coaching against this kid. So, yeah, I would assume he's going to have a heck of a game plan going into this just to stop him and all these wideouts. The fortunate for the Lions, they do have more weapons, I believe, than the Giants. But, yeah, the issues up front, I think it's going to be similar to like how the Saints are kind of struggling up front to block anyone. The Lions are just going to have that going on. I don't know about Graham Glasgow at the guard. I like the addition of TJ Lang, but it's just you've got one side of a line, not both. And yeah, the Giants will find ways with that front seven, and there is some talent there in the back half. This defense is notorious to keep teams contained, and like you mentioned, the home field advantage, it does explain a lot in the line. I mean, it is kind of funny. I mean, very similar teams. These guys get to the passer. Both defensive lines have tough rotations. It's almost a mirror image of each other.
All right, so what are you looking at then tonight? Giants -3, extra juice, total sitting in that 42 range, as you mentioned. If you had a gun to your head, Joe, what are you going with tonight?
An Odell Beckham-less Giants I will not bet on, so I hate doing teasers, but I might do a Detroit Lions teaser and maybe try and get it up to close to a 10 and then tease that under, get that number higher, because if the Giants do win and if they are competitive, we're looking at a 2017, a low-scoring game is how the Giants can win. So I would lean an under if I had to make one square play, but yeah, if I'm really doing some action tonight, I try and tease that line side and then look at a low scoring battle.
All right. I want to talk about the Los Angeles Rams here for a second, because this is a team that I kind of mentioned to you a little bit later here in the morning, and you took a chance to get a look at the Rams and how they played last week there against the Washington Redskins. Now, they did lose 27-20, but they moved the ball well in this game. The problem is that they didn't have the ball for most of the game. The Redskins, huge edge in time of possession. Defense just couldn't get off the field, gave up too many rushing yards, but the offense looked pretty good. So the Rams play on Thursday night here, 2.5-point road favorite at San Francisco, third time in the last two seasons that the Rams have been a road favorite. Over the Jets last year was one of them. Over San Francisco was the other one. But this is a very difficult handicap for a lot of different reasons. You've got two first-year head coaches in a short week. You've got the experienced Brian Hoyer for the 49ers, so you'd figure short week wouldn't bother him as much. Obviously, the far less experienced Jared Goff. But the Rams' offense here, you know, say what you will about the Indianapolis Colts, and that was a game where a couple of pick sixes, you know, really kind of put some cosmetic touches on that scoreboard. But the Rams have moved the ball effectively through 2 weeks of the Sean McVay offense.
I was really shocked. I mean, a lot of people had to look at that score and come away shocked, but it's the offense being in sync. And they added some veterans on the line. And really, I think it was the adjustments. They came out the second half, really, like with a purpose, bat out of hell. And Goff actually made some throws. Watkins made a move. Todd Gurley had a big run, and then he hurdles Bashaud Breeland on the catch for the big highlight reel score I'm sure everybody saw. But Gurley finally looking like he did when he was a rookie. Sammy Watkins maybe making good on hopes from the first round. So there is talent, and the line got stuff moving. So that's the most encouraging part. But like you mentioned, the defense is still – I was expecting a little bit better from Wade Phillips, and maybe it's Aaron Donald getting into things, but it seemed like he was busy still. The first game back in full action there, they lined him up everywhere. He was even stand-up outside linebackers. So maybe they're just figuring things out. And I think still, watching that game, though, play of the game, that second drive, that fake punt was money. They bluffed a fake punt in the middle of the third, late in the third, and then they still kicked. But finally in the fourth, it worked out. Hecker got his throw off. And John Fossil, the son of Jim, special teams coach, getting it done. That's what tied it up 20-20. So they've got a little savvy on that coaching staff, and I like what McVay's done with the offense. Finally, it's a lot of talent there. There's, you know, as we mentioned, just first-rounders all up in the locker room. So McVay's getting them pointed in the right direction. And finally, the Rams might have a serviceable offensive line. I just knocked on wood again.
What about Jared Goff? I mean, you know, we kind of looked at it in the preseason. He had decent numbers in the preseason. So it looked like he was getting a fairly quick grasp on this offense. And one of the big things that we know about McVay from Washington is that he took Kirk Cousins, who is a little bit above average, I would say. I mean, it's not like he was a highly sought after coming out of Michigan State or anything like that. Goff, obviously, you know, a high first-round pick, so this is a guy that's supposed to have, you know, this superior level of talent. Didn't show last year, wasn't a good fit, didn't have a ton of time to throw. But one of the hallmarks of that Washington offense, and we talked about this before, is that they have a lot of skill players they can get the ball to in space. So this looks like it's a good fit for Goff. I mean, what do you think the ceiling for this kid is this season now with an offense that appears to help out his skill set?
Oh, well, he's going to be actually serviceable. If they're giving him protection, he will eventually find holes. I mean, you know, he's not going to be able to exploit multiple things. He won't catch 12 on the field and you know, completely manage the game efficient. But I think he's might be past those learning curves, like the big hurdles. And what they're doing, though, is managing things well for him. It's, as you mentioned, like more checkdowns, and I think max protect. They're moving the pocket around, and I do not remember him throwing this well on the run and on the move, but there was a few plays where they just move pocket totally right, shift, and he just scrambles to the right and drops a dime to Gerald Everett that went a ways. And that there's just some, I don't know, I want to say it, less frantic play from him, certainly in year two, but I just do believe it. It's the addition of a guy like Andrew Whitworth up front. John Sullivan, not a great player, but he's seen a lot of years in the league, and just the experience extra on Brown and Havenstein. They've actually just got guys that kind of know where they're supposed to be for a change. And yeah, I don't know that Goff's just going to be any world changer, but boy, McVay certainly looks like he's fixing him. And just once again, just kind of making chicken salad out of not a lot of ingredients here at quarterback. I think it's a guy that I don't see like a great future from Goff, but he's going to make them serviceable. And boy, if they get anywhere close to 500, McVay looks like a genius here.
Well, let's stay in the NFC West here. Let's talk about the Arizona Cardinals, who, as I mentioned, did win last week over Indianapolis, but it was not pretty at all. And in fact, it was rather ugly, to be completely honest with you. 16-13 winner. Now, to be fair, Arizona back-to-back road games to start the year, back-to-back 10 a.m. starts for them. No David Johnson this week, but there are some very significant problems with the core of this team.
Yeah, it just looks downhill. They may have won that game, but the Colts just Pagano after the game, I believe, said there's no moral victories, but you kind of do have to take that from what's going to be a lost season. I mean, I think all the listeners know how bad this Colts team is, but I've got people on the street asking, well, how bad are the Cardinals if they almost got beat by us? And I'm like, that's absolutely true. In a variety of ways, they beat the Cardinals' defense, and that's the frustrating part. Like, this defense is supposed to be the strength. The concern in lapses in coverage. Tyvon Branch got worked by Jack Doyle, and the Jacoby Brissett doesn't even know the playbook, yet he looked competent. He moved the chains. He got first downs. Once again, that simplified kind of offense for him, but it worked. The dump-offs to Frank Gore, the handoffs. I think they re-signed Jack Doyle for a reason, and he looked really good. But the Cardinals, also on offense, it's a situation – yes, David Johnson's out, but this offensive line just cannot open holes. And Carson Palmer is in a whole different world. It's just, yeah, I hate to put it all on one player there, but the rest of these guys got to step up, and it's just not happening. And the sad part about this is I don't want to see it, but this could be the end of that whole regime there in Arizona with Arians and Tom Moore and Carson Palmer. Like, they may go for that whole overhaul after this season if it just keeps on going this way. And yeah, I think one underlying the thing that I'm noticing, definitely miss a veteran like Calais Campbell, the defensive lineman he's now playing for the Jaguars, and also that safety that went to the Ravens and improved their defense, Tony Jefferson. Those two players, those veterans, I think that's really showing off in their back half.
How bad does this thing get with Carson Palmer? I mean, through 2 weeks, this guy in his age 37 season, he'll turn 38 here in December, so pretty much around week 16, he's already thrown the ball 84 times. And when you look at last year and in previous years, that arm strength was starting to go down. You know, going through his progressions was starting to go down a little bit. He can't make those throws to the far side of the field. What happens as we go forward here for Palmer if they're not able to change this workload? Because he's not going to survive throwing the ball 42 times a week.
No, and that's the huge issue. Teams know it's coming. They're going to bring multiple blitzers off a side. They're going to find weakness. DJ Humphries is still a bit of a liability. You could catch him. And I don't think we'll see Drew Stanton by any means, but the problem with a guy like Palmer, they're already looking to replace you when you're this old. And It like I said, it's just imagine Bruce Arians starting over with a new quarterback. It just doesn't seem likely. So, yeah, we'll see Palmer the whole rest of the way, but how long does it last, and how many licks does it take for this Tootsie Roll Pop to get to the bubblegum center? I mean, he is already proven to be a little bit injury-prone here. I mean, I think that tendon in his knee is some other lady's Achilles that was surgically implanted there. It was like revolutionary surgery at the time. I mean, that's how much you can really rely on him is definitely a question going forward for the Cardinals. But, yeah, this year – it's just going to be, I think, more brutal games. And Larry Fitzgerald getting older. And John Brown's been a bright spot. And I do believe, you know, we're going to see a little bit more of that rookie from Grambling, Chad Williams. But, yeah, there's just not a lot of star power around Carson Palmer at the skill positions right now. And, I hate to say it, but, yeah, David Johnson, it's just a huge downgrade from what they have behind him.
You know, and I think that all we need to see what's going on with Arizona is the fact that on Monday night at University of Phoenix Stadium, they're a 3.5-point underdog to the Dallas Cowboys, who just got run over by the Denver Broncos last week. So I think that's a pretty good indication of the state of affairs here for the Cardinals. And, you know, again, Monday night, a place that has a true home field advantage, probably the full three. There aren't a whole lot of those left in the NFL. And Arizona's a 3.5-point dog at home on Monday night. So I think that kind of speaks to the issues and the concerns that we're talking about here with the Arizona Cardinals. Now let's talk about the Denver Broncos. You know, we just mentioned that They really ran over the Dallas Cowboys 42-17 here in week two. What are you seeing from the Broncos?
Just Trevor Siemian getting the job done. I think, well, important perspective in this game to Cowboys in the secondary. The injury situation without Orlando Scandrick, they were definitely able to take advantage there. So Demaryius Thomas worked that back half just with ease. But I'm just so impressed with the Denver running game, still strong. And the interesting twist in that game, of course, is Ronald Leary, former Cowboy up front there. But the pickup, the signing and free agency and the money they paid him, I think they may have gotten that right. I know it's only two games in, but he's played well for them. And C.J. Anderson, I know he's not appealing, and I know he's totally unsexy as far as running backs go, but he just continues to keep getting the job done. It's the vision. It's allowed him to play so long and so well. That's really the key trait in any quality run. All these guys can run. All these guys are elite athletes, play Division I college ball, but it's the ability to see the field, anticipate. And Anderson, he's got that just, I'd say, 100%. He always had it at Cal. It's just he doesn't run a 4.5 40. He's more like a 4.6 guy. But when you're able to make the move before the defender and just see what he's going to do before he even does it, C.J. Anderson is really kind of unsung hero of the Denver Broncos. But as I was talking about earlier, like, it's these one players that make the difference. Von Miller flying around at the speed of light, that's what Denver's all about. And you've got those two-man corners. It's just unfair because they can play. They can just stare at the quarterback and not even look at the receiver because they know in less than 3 seconds Von Miller's going to be right there in the QB's face. And it's like I said, it's kind of – if you're not a Broncos fan, I'm sure you're jealous of watching how good Von Miller is at beating tackles. It's just a thing of beauty. He really, speaking of 4.5 speed, he's got that running back speed from a linebacker position. So that's he's pretty ridiculous. I think the big concern, though, going forward for the Broncos, that Garrett Bowles looked like, I don't want to say it's a broken ankle, but that looks like a major ankle injury. They're going to have to rotate guys in there at his left tackle position, and that's why they drafted him. He's just such a Jesse in the running game. I mean, he beats people up and wants to finish blocks, so he'll be missed. But Siemian, he looked the way he did, similar to Goff. They're running plays that he can make. They're not overextending him. They're scheming just what he does well. And I think more so than Goff, though, Siemian is a little bit underrated as a scrambler, and he has always thrown well on the run. And intermediate, the kid's sharp. I just think more than anything, he's that guy. It's not impressive. It's not a howitzer, but he throws a catchable ball, and they're limiting the guy's mistakes. I think, this defense, as long as Von Miller stays healthy, man, they're competitive in any game anywhere. And that's just a solid team. And shout out to Adam Gotsis, playing the Aussie Rules football player on the defensive line. He's in for Jared Crick. I think that guy, that's another underrated player for the Broncos defense, that he's not going to be making highlight reel plays, but he's just impossible against the running game. I think that's why they had a lot of success against the Cowboys.
You know, and I think what's really interesting about this situation here for Denver is that you go from a coaching staff that's got Gary Kubiak, and you know, you can say what you will about Kubiak. I know there are some people that are pretty high on him. There are some people that are fairly low on him. But, you know, was a very experienced guy there, does have a Super Bowl ring, of course, in 2015. So they go from him to Vance Joseph. They go from Rick Dennison to Mike McCoy, who certainly has plenty of experience and was also the offensive coordinator here in Denver for 4 seasons prior to this second stint. But Joe Woods, a guy that's been coaching, at least as a graduate assistant, and then on up since the age of 22, all the way back in 1992, getting his first shot here as a defensive coordinator. Now, it's hard to walk into a better situation than you can have in Denver with a defense that's been so good for so long. But this is a coaching staff that, you know, you probably could have expected maybe some communication issues, maybe some differences of opinion here at the outset. But they look like they've gelled really, really nicely already. And that's good for a younger head coach like a Vance Joseph.
Oh, yeah. The questions on the defensive staff were easily resolved by a veteran group. They didn't switch the scheme. They just kept it the same, and these are guys that have, as you mentioned, just been doing it a while. And I'm just, like I said, the offensive side of this coaching staff is what's really impressed me. You knew Mike McCoy could get it done, and you just hit it on the head. He's been here in this city and done it before, but very impressed with some of the other Studsville, the running back coach, Jeep Christ, son, father of Keller Christ, I guess. But the tight ends are playing well. Well, Big Vern getting it done. There's a lot of things going on good on the offensive side of the ball, and that's what I would have assumed we couldn't score a point. And it's just been just a cohesion group, and I didn't think the running scheme would be so effective to start, but they just keep plugging away. I'm just I think overall Mike McCoy just might be the secret to this, like a huge upgrade from Dennison, and you know, more open-minded of a coordinator. And early on in this game, there were just some things. I think it fits the roster better. Mike McCoy's attack, it's more of a one receiver. We're going to profile this guy and then the rest of the players, and you can see the results. Demaryius Thomas is, I think he's in for a career year.
All right, let's talk about the New Orleans Saints. Now, the New Orleans Saints, a team that I had in the Super Contest, and that one was pretty much over before it started. Tom Brady drops 20 points in the first quarter of this game, the most that Tom Brady has ever had in a first quarter in the regular season as a starting quarterback, and that obviously goes back quite a ways. So probably not a big surprise that he did this to the New Orleans Saints, who couldn't shut down Sam Bradford, who have arguably the worst defense in the NFL. So I'm not real thrilled with myself about that pick. But, you know, what can the Saints do from this point? I mean, they've spent money in the back seven. They've drafted in the back seven. What can change for this team as we go forward here?
It's absolutely right. They've spent money. They've tried to address these concerns. I still think Marshawn Lattimore, he's going to be a player here. It's just the system. You really have to start questioning Dennis Allen. There's talent here. I think the main issue for this defense, and that is the crux of it, they just can't stop the pass. And that cornerback group, I think they were counting on Delvin Bro, and they miss his leadership there, just being without him for the whole year. I think more of a coach on the field, just how well he is at getting everyone lined up in the right spots. But the linebacker, I think they went a little, I don't want to say cheap because they paid these guys, but getting Manti Te'o and A.J. Klein in the offseason to address your linebacker, and then drafting Alex Anzalone. The reason why they're available is Carolina and Los Angeles, then San Diego, knew these guys can't run. They knew their weakness, and they weren't going to pay them. And sorry, Saints, you did. So I think still linebacker's a problem, corner's a problem. They've got a great group of safeties. So that they do have that going for them. Maybe Marcus Williams plays a little bit more corner to alleviate some of these problems, but they're having problems getting to the quarterback, issues out in coverage, and then also at tackle, they're shifting guys around too much. That injury to Tron Armstead early in the offseason couldn't have happened at the worst time, because right now Ramchick's not ready there at left, and they started Andrus Pete last week, tackle, move Ramchick to right, and then move Senio Calamete into guard. It just, three different players, three different positions. It's the cohesion's just not there, and it showed in the offense. They're just having problems scoring, still having problems running the ball, and that's why. I mean, it's all about the chemistry up front with those five guys, and right now they don't have it. I think they could fix that, though. You know, losing Zach Strief also was the big problem there. They needed him at right tackle. He's just such a strong run blocker. But they have some guys. I mean, Andrus Pete, Ramchick, these guys were great college players. So there is some hope there, and Armstead could be back eventually. So they'll find ways to score. But as you mentioned, it's the same thing as last season. They're just going to have to outscore people, and I don't know that they could do it right now. And it's just going to continue to be picked on, you know, these overs. You get into these daily fantasy plays, the player prop bets. You want to go against those Saints, and that a defense you know just cannot get the job done.
You know, one of the things that pisses me off about the NFL is that there are so many retread hires for all kinds of positions. Coordinators, you know, like we just talked about a guy in Mike McCoy who came back to Denver. after being a head coach for San Diego. And, you know, at least he's getting the job done. You know, at least he was a guy that did well there as the offensive coordinator. You look at somebody like Dennis Allen, failed as a head coach. He went 8-28, you know, as a defensive coordinator, never been in the top half of the league in yards allowed or points allowed. I don't get it. Like, at some point, Mickey Loomis and Tom Benson need to get off their asses and make a move that actually helps this team out. Make a defensive coaching change that can give them a chance to go out there and win something else while Drew Brees is still a productive quarterback. I mean, look, say what you will about the problems that they've had in the red zone so far this year, and, you know, say what you will about how the seasons have gone for Drew Brees from a win-loss standpoint here recently, that dude can still sling the football. And they're just wasting these years. I mean, you look at guys like Peyton Manning, you look at guys like Drew Brees, you look at some of these other guys, you know, even Brett Favre to an extent, that have hung on, that have still been productive types of quarterbacks. I mean, Tom Brady is still out there throwing dimes week after week after week. He's in his upper 30s. But the one outlier is the New Orleans Saints, because they have not given Drew Brees a defense that allows him to be competitive, you know, overall. And I don't understand it. I don't get what the problem is down there to the point where they won't hire somebody that can do something different and maybe maximize the athleticism that they do have.
Yeah, and I don't know specifically who they'd hire, but there's got to be a better answer than Dennis Allen. The success he had was 1 year in Denver, and then he gets a job off of that. It's kind of puzzling. He did have a rapid ascension, but yeah, I'd look at the assistants, coaching staffs of other defensive teams. You know, look how good the Vikings are doing. Maybe you bring someone that knows Mike Zimmer's defense over, defensive coordinator. You could get Zimmer, Adam Zimmer, his son. But I'd look, you know what, Baltimore, the linebackers coach, Don Martindale. They're doing great work with those linebackers. He knows that defense. Bring that over. Try something, as you mentioned, just get some complete changeover, a difference. Heck, go with Perry Fuel. He's available. I mean, he could at least run something that would keep offenses at bay. At least his cover two could buy you some time and let those offensive linemen get fresh for the next time Brees gets the ball. Because yeah, I still believe we can get it done. And that's one last part about their struggles offensively. It's a guy I still believe in his height. He has to find those throw-in lanes, and he has to have clean approach, and that's where it's just a struggle right now. Those three new guys up front, it's once they kind of get their sea legs, so to speak, I would expect, and maybe not next week, but the week after, it's the offense will definitely start coming around, but it's still the other side of the ball is a complete dumpster fire.
Well, and maybe the problem is Sean Payton, too, and maybe that's the problem here in Cincinnati with the last team we're going to talk about today, with Marvin Lewis. I mean, Marvin Lewis is a guy that, excuse me, had a lot of goodwill built up. You know, he's taken this team to the playoffs a lot. But it is very clear, at least in my mind as an outsider, that something different needs to happen here in Cincinnati. And that probably means the firing of Marvin Lewis. I mean, he's gotten the team to the playoffs. He's, you know, dumped in the bed, so to speak, in all of those playoff possibilities that they've had. Now they're firing offensive coordinators. You know, he's a guy that has clearly had some issues, I think, since Mike Zimmer was gone, since Hugh Jackson was gone. There just hasn't been that same sense of continuity. Maybe Andy Dalton's the problem. Maybe the players are the problem. But I think that when you look at changing the offensive coordinator 2 weeks of the season, and you look at what's going on here with Cincinnati, I think the problems start at the top, and that's probably with Marvin Lewis.
Yeah, Marvin's in trouble. You could read it on the face of everyone on the team right now. It's almost shell-shocked, and it's not just Dalton. It's like the whole team's been drugged. I don't know how better to say it. And obviously, offensive tackle issues again, this team. And we talked about how Whitworth has improved the situation over in Los Angeles for the Rams. Well, losing Whitworth and the Bengals deciding to let him walk, deciding to let Kevin Zeitler walk, we talked about in the offseason, this was a line that had a chance to be really bad. Well, they lived up to that, and it's resulted in Dalton just – I don't remember him being this afraid to make mistakes. Sure, the pocket, that's one thing. The confidence, it can stem from not having that time and just being on the run the whole entirety of the game, but I just haven't seen this many throwaways. There was – the one of the weirdest ones is that they got a really deep ball. This Erickson kid who played really well for them, number 12, it was just a huge bomb. They're in the red zone, and on second and third down, Dalton throws it away. They get a field goal. Even at the end of the Ravens game, in a shutout, you haven't scored a point. So for a little pride's sake, score something. He threw it away on fourth down. That this is not Dalton. This is not the same Horned Frog we know from TCU. It's there's something personally going on mentally, I would wager to say. I know I don't want to go too far here, but it's not physical. He's scrambling and reacting well. He's overthrowing players. So it's not an arm strength issue. It's not a conditioning. It's upstairs. It's from the neck up. And I'm definitely worried about Dalton and A.J. Green now getting in the media saying, I need the ball, and I don't blame him. I don't care if he's double covered. This is your guy to make the difference in those situations. He's supposed to win in double coverage and jump balls. So just instead of throwing it away, give one of the better receivers in the league a chance. So I'm not calling for Dalton to get benched or anything, but maybe a meeting with a psychiatrist or something, because there's some decision making problems that I'm seeing, and I don't know. Hire the new offensive coordinator. I don't know that that's the answer. I think someone's got to sit down with Dalton and get him to, you know, throw those dice.
Well, it'll be a situation to watch, because I mean, this Bengals defense has played well through two games, albeit against Joe Flacco and the Ravens, with Flacco coming off of not playing a whole lot. Then last week against the Texans with Deshaun Watson and his first start on a short week. So that's another thing too, is that this defense, once it gets challenged, and you know, a challenge is coming on Sunday because they play Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. You know, if this defense starts to fall off, which is certainly very possible, like I said, given the quality of competition thus far, things could get much, much uglier here for Cincinnati. And then at that point, you know, you're almost forced into a change, whether it's Dalton, whether it's firing Marvin Lewis midseason. You know, I mean, they've already made the offensive coordinator change. I don't really know where you can go from there. It just doesn't feel like, you know, this is a spot where they can go and plug the holes in the boat before it sinks all the way to the bottom.
Yeah, it's I don't know if you could go midseason, but yeah, Ken Zampezi, Mr. Fall Guy here. The biggest issue for the defense, Sean Williams, that injury at the very right before the season, and then the suspension of Perfect. I mean, Nick Vigil actually has played really well for them. That's the, I'd say, the silver lining of their roster right now. He's just, I don't remember him being this fast. Shout out to both the Vigil brothers, but I think the defense will come around, and maybe not this next week against Green Bay. I'd assume Martellus Bennett's just going to run wild without Perfect chasing him around. I still think it's either they turn around offensively or this will be the end of another era. It's just that some of these long-term coaches finally seeing the end of their rope, and I think a lot of people have seen it coming for Marvin Lewis, but the difficulty's always been the Bengals in that organization willing to do things a little bit on the cheap. They fear change, and that's why they keep just kind of edging Marvin Lewis's contract. Quietly in the offseason, they give him another 2-year extension, and this may be finally the end of that.
Lots of good insights here on today's show from Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible. Joe, what's going on over there right now?
Oh, just rebuilding, getting the scouting reports fired out. Had a lot of senior evaluations in the tank, so really trying to shine on that 2018 class before we get into evaluating those underclassmen. So, yeah, finishing out all of 2018, and it's quite a task.
At NFL Draft Bible on Twitter, at Joe W. Everett on Twitter. Joe Everett, thank you so much for your time, and we appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week, brother.
All right, looking forward to it, Adam.
Strong stuff there from Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible. We got another weekend of football coming up on the horizon here. Games on Thursday, games on Friday, games on Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Lots of football now, 5-day football weekends. If you don't have an account over at DSI Sportsbook, you are costing yourself money. You have to be able to shop around for the best prices that are out there in the market, for the best lines. You know, you heard Brent from DSI talk about it last week and in the last 2 weeks really on the show, about the differences between minus 105, minus 110, minus 115, those little percentages that eventually add up to be a whole lot. So you have to have the ability to shop around at multiple sports books. If you don't have an account over at DSI, use the promo code BTB and the number 25 to get one. You'll get a $25 free bet just for signing up. Once you make your first deposit, you'll get a 100% deposit match bonus for the sports book. If you decide to play at the live casino, you'll get 100% deposit match bonus over there as well. And you'll have the opportunity, if you do sign up over there, deposit into your account, you'll have the chance to play that streak challenge where, as I mentioned at the top of the show, one of the DSI contestants over there just hit 21 in a row, $25,000 cash prize. They give out free play for 5 winners in a row, 9 winners in a row, 13 winners in a row, etc. So if you have an account over there, that's something you can participate in. Doesn't cost anything to join that contest. You just have to have money in your account and have some wagering activity over the last 30 days. So again, that's over there at DSI Sportsbook, BTB, and the number 25 is that promo code. One more segment left here for this Monday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is with Mr. Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com with our college football first look. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
It's going well. How's it going for you?
So far, so good. Everything going off without a hitch here on this Monday edition of the show. Lots of things to talk about here because we're getting closer to conference play. We had some interesting results last week. One of the things that we like to do here, we like to catch you up on some of the news and some of the things that are going on in what we like to call our quick hitters segment, injury updates, stats, trends, some good stuff for you to carry over here into week 4 of the college football season. So, Kyle, let's go ahead and start with that. What's the first point you've got for the quick hitters this week?
First up is Lamar Jordan, expected to miss this week's game for New Mexico against Tulsa. Head injury there. You know, Jordan knows this offense well, definitely a good runner. I think it's certainly a downgrade from him. I think this is an offense where, you know, somebody can step in and do pretty decent because they don't throw the ball that much. But they're playing against a Tulsa team that's going to score a lot of points, so you have to question whether they're going to be able to keep up in that kind of matchup.
You know, I actually was watching that New Mexico game, and I saw the hit on Lamar Jordan, and it was very, very blatant. It was definitely a late hit. It was targeting. It was everything you want to call it. And watching him get up and stagger around was just uncomfortable to watch. And, I mean, I know it's a contact sport. You know, we kind of become a little bit desensitized to some of that stuff, but, man, it was not a good look at all. And I'm not surprised to hear that he's out for this week. But one thing I do want to mention here is that New Mexico has thrown the ball a little bit more this season. Now, of course, part of that has been because they've been trailing in games. But as you mentioned, they run that offense. They run that spread option type of look. But they've already thrown the ball, I think it's 72 times this year. Last year, they only threw the ball 179 times throughout the whole season. And that was 13 games. So that's even a bigger issue here to lose your quarterback when you're having to throw the football a little bit more.
Yeah, I think it's a fairly big issue there. You know, not much experience there at the backup spot. And really, like I said, you know, they're going to have to score a lot of points against this Tulsa team that plays as fast as anybody in the country. Second point I wanted to make was about Middle Tennessee State. Stocksville cracked sternum. Richie James, an ankle injury. James might be the best player in this conference, a really good NFL future there. And Stocksville is arguably the most important to his team because of the drop-off. There's no line for this weekend's game, and it's no wonder why. I mean, who would want to set a line for a game? When Stocksville is considered questionable, I'd be surprised if he plays. And Richie James is listed as questionable as well. So major injuries there at MTSU.
Yeah, this is a tough one to look at. I mean, you know, we talked about this actually in our email back and forth this morning, and this is something that we talked about Middle Tennessee State last year when Stockstill was out. They looked awful. I mean, they could not have looked any worse without Brent Stockstill. This week, they expected to go with a lot of Wildcat, as Richie James had mentioned in the quote that you sent over to me. He got hurt, so you know, I don't know where they go from here. That's a big-time issue, and I mean, the combination of Stockstill and James from a power rating standpoint, 8-9 points probably?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. 9 points is what I would adjust them for those two being out. It seems like a big adjustment, but you got to keep in mind, this is not one of those Big Ten SEC schools where, you know, somebody steps in that's a really highly touted guy. This is a big drop-off from a really good player to the next guy in line. So I think 9 points is very fair here. I wouldn't want to bet Middle Tennessee State without those two.
No, I don't blame him. That's one that I do need to update a little bit here. And they take on Bowling Green this week. So, I mean, there's some margin for error. But still, life without Brent Stockstill, as I mentioned, has not gone well. And now you're taking away your top skill player. Like you said, probably the top skill player in the conference. So big adjustments certainly need to be made.
Yeah, definitely. So I wanted to give a misleading final score, and I do a misleading final scores article at Bang the Book every week. So shameless plug here. But Western Michigan 37, Idaho 28. Idaho should have won that game. Idaho 6.65 yards per play. Western Michigan 4.75. Idaho's average starting field position was a 22.1 yard line. Western Michigan, the 43.7 yard line. Obviously, that's turnovers. Idaho was minus two in a turnover margin. To me, that was a really interesting game because Western Michigan's a team I have ranked pretty well. Idaho's not a very good team. Idaho should have won that game. You could certainly say that Western Michigan was overlooking that game, but not one that looks good in the box score for Western Michigan.
No, I mean, it's tough to overlook that game. I understand you're coming off of USC and Michigan State, but also that's your home opener against Idaho. You're laying almost
right.
three touchdowns, and you play Wagner this week. So not like you're in a look-ahead spot or any kind of situation like that. I think the biggest problem for Western Michigan, and again, we won't see it here this week against Wagner, but they do open up MAC play against Ball State in a couple of weeks. They cannot throw the football. 54.4% completion percentage for their quarterback this year, John Wasink or Wasink or whatever it is. One touchdown, two picks. So teams are just going to load the box against them. And, you know, at some point you have to make some throws, whether it's in the play action game, where it's just to move the sticks every now and then on third and six, third and seven. So Western Michigan is a team, you know, I was too low on them coming into the season. I sort of overcompensated for the loss of Fleck, the loss of Terrell, the loss of Davis. But I feel like as we go throughout MAC play here, they are a team that I may start gradually rolling back a little bit.
Yeah, Western Michigan has two big problems. Like you said, the first one, they can't throw the ball. And the second one, they can't stop the run. 5.97 yards per carry allowed. You know, almost 6 yards per carry. That's pretty bad. It's 125th in the country out of 130 teams. And that's certainly going to be an issue in MAC play, especially if you can't throw the football. So that's a team to keep an eye on. I wanted to mention the hurricane situation. Jose and Maria both out there in the Atlantic. It seems like, you know, every single week we've talked about this. Every single week there's a hurricane to keep an eye on with the wind. It looks like Maria is going to be later than Saturday, so probably not an issue. Jose could make it windy in some of the games in the Northeast. Pretty big margin of error for forecasts at this point so far ahead of Saturday, but certainly something to keep an eye on. You don't want to bet an over and be stuck with an over where the line drops 10 points because the wind is extremely heavy, and that could certainly happen. There's some serious line moves if there is big wind in a game.
Well, and that's one of those, too, where when you look at the track of Maria, and I was kind of looking at this a little bit here today, as you mentioned, looks like it's going to make it, you know, early next week, probably Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, something like that, depending on if it makes U.S. landfall. That is a slow-moving storm. It is very, very slow-moving, given the track that I saw for it here today, which means it's something that could affect week five. It may not get here for week four, but week five is something you may want to be looking for, especially games up the Atlantic seaboard a little bit, maybe up in the Virginia, Maryland, the Northeast type area, depending on the track that that storm has. But again, it's just a reminder that you always, always, always have to factor in the weather. I'm sure you have more quick hitter points, but since we're talking about the weather here, I want to touch on this. Central Florida has played one game. Florida State has played one game. There are a few teams that have only played two games. Miami's only played one game. How are you approaching those Florida teams here that, you know, have only played one game? I mean, we're almost a month into the college football season now. They've played one game, and they haven't – it's not like they've been practicing the whole time. You know, they've had other considerations. They've been out doing cleanup efforts, or they haven't been able to access campus. They haven't been allowed to practice. Have you made adjustments for any of those teams that have only played one or two games so far?
This is a really hard question. You know, I've looked at this a decent amount already. I'm going to look at it some more. I don't think it can be a positive, though. I mean, like you said, it's not like they've been getting to practice the whole time. These other teams have gotten to play two or three games, and here these teams have played one. I think it's certainly a negative. I haven't adjusted it in my PRs, but, you know, just as to whether I'm going to make a play on a certain game, it's certainly something I'm going to keep in mind. You know, as far as being healthy, it's a good thing because you haven't played as many games, not as many people have gotten hurt. But I think the negative outweighs that just because, you know, you don't have that game experience. And, you know, it's kind of unheard of. You know, I can't remember the last time we had a team, you know, in week four that's only played one game. I don't think it's happened since I can remember. So it's one of those things that's a little bit hard to know what to do with because it just never happens.
No, that's absolutely right. We'll go a little bit more in-depth on one of those teams here a little bit later in the show when we talk Central Florida and Maryland. Is it a coaching thing? I mean, do you look at a situation like Florida State and say, okay, Jimbo Fisher's been here a long time. You know, he's got good coordinators. They're probably going to be okay. On the flip side, you look at a team like Miami. You know, Mark Richt's only been there a couple of years. Good coach, but, you know, you sort of look at it from that perspective, maybe in terms of handicapping the coaching?
Yeah, I'd be more likely to bet on a team that had a good coach that had that much time off because, you know, I'd trust them to keep them focused even through a difficult time. Even then, though, I have to say, you know, I'd have to be really like it to play it in that situation. I think it's easier to stay away from that type of thing because it's kind of akin to the stock market where when you have a lot of unknowns, you know, stock market will go down. You don't want to buy a stock when you don't know enough, you know, that too many variables that are just unknown. And to me, that's kind of the situation in these games.
All right, sounds good. We can keep going with the quick hitters here because we'll touch on this again, like I said, during that Central Florida Maryland breakdown. So what do you have next?
Okay, next I wanted to say a couple systems here for this week. When I was running the data here for this week, first of all, the over is 102.77 in week four with a total of 52.5 or less in non-conference matchups. So it's 58% overs in non-conference matchups. I think that makes a lot of sense that the non-conference matchups are the better games to take overs here this week. Once you start getting into conference play, teams know each other a lot more. So I wanted to split it up by conference and non-conference. Actually, conference is below 50% on the over, even at that number. And non-conference is 102.77 at 58% overs.
You know, I think it's a really excellent trend and stat to give out there. And I think that a big part of that is that, you know, and I kind of talked about this a little bit in my power ratings piece, which I posted today, a lot of teams start conference play next week. I mean, the Big 12 starts conference play this week, but a lot of teams start conference play next week. So they want to, you know, put their best foot forward in terms of showing something offensively. And then if they get a big lead, they don't want to get anybody hurt. So they start going to underclassmen and that type of thing. You know, these last non-conference games, not all that important in a lot of cases. So that's a trend that definitely makes sense, and I wouldn't be surprised to see it continue here this week.
Okay, so this one's a little bit more complicated, and I know it's not a huge sample size, but it's still interesting. Teams who are off one loss and are favored by a touchdown or more against a team coming off one or two losses are 38-8 against the spread in their last 46 in week four. So this has been a week to lay the wood on teams bouncing back in week four. It's really been a successful strategy. I know that's a small sample size. I certainly know it won't continue at that rate. But I think there is something to it that, you know, a team that's the better team, that's favored here in this week, especially if it's a non-conference matchup, which is where the percentage has really ran up, it makes sense because, you know, a team wants to get it right before they start conference play. And they're going to go ahead and lay it on that team a little bit more than they normally would. So I think it's interesting that you can get a 38-8 ATS number by, you know, a 7-point favorite or larger.
No, I think so, too. I think that kind of speaks as well to that overtrend that you gave where those teams that are, you know, pretty good want to go out there and show that they're pretty good and get all the things get all the kinks ironed out before they actually get into conference play. So that one makes a whole lot of sense as well.
Okay, last thing I wanted to say, and this is just kind of a recap of last week, and you and I have talked about that a little bit. Clemson was extremely impressive last week. You know, I've had to move them up a lot in my power ratings. They have to be number two in your power ratings right now. I have them only 3 points behind Alabama in my power ratings now. This Clemson defense is scary good. They're getting some pretty good quarterback play as well, and it should get even better. So I think Clemson's certainly a scary team.
No, Clemson is a very scary team. I still have it 4.5 now. I adjusted Alabama up a little bit, but I did move Clemson up based on that performance. And I talked about it. Kelly Bryant looks like a dude that just gets it. I mean, he's already a junior. He's been in the program for a little while now, but he can run. He can make some throws. You know, I mean, Louisville's a good team. and it looked like he was playing just some run-of-the-mill, you know, lower-tier ACC team or somebody from the Sun Belt. I mean, he was just out there doing pretty much whatever he wanted to do for the most part. And, of course, that Clemson defense is just phenomenal. They're a really, really good team. I mean, I know that goes without saying, but I agree. I think the gap will get smaller as we go throughout the year between Alabama and Clemson, which kind of speaks to another thing. I think I saw at Westgate, you could still catch Clemson at like 6-1 to win the national championship. And Alabama's such a huge favorite. Man, that looks like a decent bet right about now.
Yeah, I think that's a decent bet right now as well. Clemson should just get better. Like I said, you know, they have a lot of youth on the offensive side, but those guys are playing pretty well. That defense is really good, and obviously it helps to have such an amazing defensive coordinator. Can't think of any better defensive coordinators than Venables, so that helps them quite a bit.
All right, let's get into some of these games here, and we got a lot of different things to talk about, and I want to start with a Friday. Actually, I'm going to start with Thursday night real quick. I just want to talk Temple and South Florida just for a second here, because I did have a listener question about it this morning. South Florida now a 20.5-point favorite. I just posted this preview right before the show over at bangthebook.com. And I think the biggest takeaway with regards to this line, and you can see it in the line movement up from 17.5 to 20.5, is that Temple has been the team that you've had to adjust. South Florida, they really haven't been challenged all that much. I'm not all that surprised. They're kind of sleepwalking through the start of the year. But Temple's been outgained in all three games. Now, against Notre Dame, it's not a surprise. Against Villanova and UMass, that's not a good look.
Yeah, the only way I could play this game is South Florida. And I don't trust South Florida a lot with Charlie Strong. I'm not sure, you know, this hasn't been a very good start to the season for them either. But Temple, big downgrades. You know, and like you said, last couple weeks they've not been impressive at all. The other thing to keep in mind is South Florida is playing extremely fast. You know, they're up there in tempo right now with Tulsa. So they're playing even faster than they were last year, which makes it easier to cover a big number. So that's something to keep in mind as well is, you know, yes, this is a big number, but when you're playing that fast, it's easier to cover a big number.
All right, so this is something I did key in on in the preview, and I want to ask you about this in terms of, you know, historically what you've seen. So South Florida right now, 14th in total yards per game, 522.3. When you look at their yards per play, they're 79th with just 5.62 yards per play. I say just, but in 5.6 is still pretty decent. But again, they're doing this largely based on volume more than efficiency. So do you look for a team like that to become more efficient as the season goes along, you know, with the new offensive coordinator? Or is that just one of those things where, you know, they're playing fast, they're going to put up some numbers, but you're not quite sure how much more efficient they're going to get?
It's hard to say. I mean, it's obviously a case-by-case basis. I think it depends partially on how much you trust Charlie Strong. I thought that this was a good situation for him. They haven't played very well so far. Having said that, I would guess that they will get more efficient. I think the South Florida offense has a really good playmaker in Quentin Flowers. I know he's not a great passer. He's a really good runner. They definitely miss Marlon Mack. There's no doubt about that, and who wouldn't? I mean, he was a great running back for them. But I think South Florida becomes more efficient, and I also think that Temple's defense is down quite a bit from what they've been the last few years.
See, the thing about South Florida, you just said it, and I kind of said it in the preview, and there's this perception that they haven't played very well, right? They've scored 40 points per game. They've outscored the opposition, or they've outgained the opposition by almost 200 yards per game, more than a full yard per play, better than the opposition. They've scored 40 points per game, and we're talking about a team that hasn't played very well. Like, I think it's one of those things where perception was so high on this team because everyone looked at South Florida, looked at the schedule, and said, okay, this team's not going to lose a game. They're going to play that New Year's Six bowl game for the Group of Five bid. They may wind up getting some kind of chatter in the playoff discussion. They won't get in, but they may be one of those teams that runs the table and, you know, people kind of start talking about them. But I mean, that's the thing. You're talking about a team that's 3-0, that's outscored the opposition 40-21. And we're talking about them not playing that well. I know competition matters and they've only played San Jose State, Stony Brook and Illinois, but they're not playing well and they're still beating up on teams. So that's kind of scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you look at what they've done in the first half in some of these games is part of the reason I say they've played so poorly. It seems like they haven't been ready for these games. They were losing to Stony Brook 10-7 at halftime. And that's really inexcusable for a team with the kind of talent that USF has. Also, their special teams play has been awful. I mean, you look at their special teams play, it's been about as bad as anybody in the country. That's something that has to get better. They're certainly not going to run the table. They were better last week in general against Illinois. You know, an Illinois defense that isn't terrible, especially to, I mean, they played against San Jose State and Stony Brook in the first couple games. So I think there are signs of South Florida's getting better.
All right, let's move to Friday night here. I want to touch on this game because this was a line that kind of stood out to me that didn't make a whole lot of sense. And then there was a line move that made even less sense. Utah and Arizona. This number is Utah -3 out there for Friday night. Pinnacle's actually showing a tiny bit of extra juice on Arizona at the +3. This is a number that actually came down prior to the show here to Utah -2.5. I don't get it. My number, my power ratings is Utah -5. Utah's a team I have bumped up. I think Tyler Huntley looks really good running this new look offense. Explain this to me if you can.
Yeah, my number is -4.5 on Utah, so I'm almost with you here. I think it's a situational question mark because, you know, Utah went to Arizona a couple years ago, lost in overtime or double overtime or whatever it was, as a 5.5-point favorite. It's not a great spot for them. You know, you go on a short week to Arizona. Arizona, not really a highly thought-of team, so it's a little bit of a flat spot. Utah has a good coach. There's no doubt about that. And if you start looking at the matchup, though, this matchup doesn't look good for Arizona to me. You know, Arizona running it up on Arizona running it up on UTEP last week proves nothing to me. UTEP is now the worst team in my power ratings. Just terrible stuff from UTEP so far this year. And Utah, they're first in the nation in rushing defense, 1.66 yards per carry allowed. This is an Arizona offense that relies really heavily on rushing. Their pass game is extremely inefficient. Like I said, I think it's a tricky spot for Utah. But I still think this line's too short. There's no way I could take Arizona here. I might take Utah. I have to look at this game more.
I don't get the – I mean, I don't like Rich Rodriguez, so maybe that's part of it too. But, yeah, I don't see how, you know, this line is as low as it is. I mean, it's obviously low for a reason, and maybe my power ratings are just a little bit different from others. You said you have it 4.5. I have it 5. I think when it was 2.5, it was a phenomenal line grab to make. But I just, you know, I was skeptical of Utah with this new offensive look. Then I got a chance to watch them a little bit against BYU. I've gotten a chance to see, you know, what they've done here in the first three games. And, you know, they haven't played the strongest schedule. And obviously it looks like BYU is not a particularly good team given the rapid adjustments we've all had to make in our power ratings. But I haven't thought much of Arizona for a while. I mean, I think Brandon Dawkins is a good player. I think he's a guy that, you know, can have some success down there with Arizona. But Utah is just a different animal, man. You know, their defensive line is good year in and year out. Kyle Whittingham is a very good head coach, as we've talked about. Maybe it is the spot, but I'm going to have a Utah ticket this week. There's really no question about it. I just hope that I'm not missing something in this number.
Yeah, I'm looking at the numbers right here now, and there was definitely a sharp move on Arizona, a steam move there at Pinnacle, which is definitely a sharp book. So somebody likes Arizona. The Greek showing Utah -2.5, -120 right now. So, yeah, I mean, it's possible that it'll go down to 2.5. Again, this is an interesting line. I'm not sure if I'll have a Utah ticket. I know I won't have an Arizona ticket. You know, I don't trust this Arizona defense either, and I don't see how anybody could. And like you said, Utah's offense has played pretty well. They're playing pretty fast. I think this could be a fairly high-scoring game. But do you trust Arizona to be able to score enough points like you? You know, the only way I could take this game is Utah. I think it's a little bit of a tricky spot, but not as tricky as this line would indicate.
All right, we got a listener request for this game, and I'm glad we get to talk about it because there's a lot of stuff to break down between UCF and Maryland. And the listener question coming from at Brash Lindberg on Twitter. Talked about him last week. I've had some good power ratings discussions with him off the air. And if any of our listeners ever want to reach out, I'm happy to chat with you at Skating Tripods on Twitter. So Central Florida, right? Big move on them in week one against FIU. They trucked FIU. I think it was 61-17 or whatever it was. Mackenzie Milton looked phenomenal. Well, UCF hasn't played the last 2 weeks now. So they've just kind of been sitting around. You know, there was a sharp move on them in that game against Memphis that was supposed to go off in week two or 3, whatever week that was. Now all these weeks are running together. In week 2, because Memphis played last week and beat UCLA. But, you know, now all of a sudden, UCF's getting 4 on the road at Maryland. And Maryland, with that big win over Texas in week 1, Texas goes out, plays really well against USC last weekend. Just seems like there's some recency bias attached to this line a little bit.
Yeah, this one's interesting. I'm going to start with the numbers here, and it's certainly early in the week, but this is a heavily bet game compared to some of the others. When you look at the ticket count, 75% of the bets are on Maryland, and 89% of the money is on Maryland. So somebody likes Maryland a lot in this game. Like you, I think that this is a little bit of a recency bias spot. This one's really close to what my line is at 3.5. So I don't think I'm going to be playing this one. And like I said, I think there are a lot of variables here to where I wouldn't really want to take UCF in this one because of the unknown. You know, this has just never happened before, as far as I know, with the one game and you're in week 4. What I will say about this game is I think this game could be pretty high scoring. Maryland's offense has been much improved this year, and their defense isn't very good. UCF is going to push the tempo. They always do. Their UC fast slogan has been, you know, very true, and I think Scott Frost is going to continue to do that, play very fast. So the way I would look at this game is to play the over. Obviously, I don't know what the line's going to be, but, you know, if this line is a reasonable number, you know, I think Mackenzie Milton is improved quite a bit in this offense. I think Maryland's offense is improved. UCF's defense should be down from last year, and Maryland's defense isn't very good either. So as long as the weather's okay, I mean, Maryland would be a little bit of a question mark for weather, so I would want to wait till later in the week. I like the over in this game.
Maryland coming off of a bye in this one as well. So, you know, a couple of teams that haven't played in some time, we'll see, you know, what kind of impact that has on the betting lines. I have this one UCF minus 1.5, and I made an adjustment for UCF after week 1. I made an adjustment after week 2, even though they didn't play the game, because of the way that the line had moved. Now, with Maryland, you know, I was impressed. I watched that win over Texas, and, you know, it was an impressive showing, and then they racked up 63 on Towson the week after. But, you know, I don't have Maryland on UCF's level in my power ratings right now, and maybe I'm too low on Maryland, maybe I'm too high on Central Florida, but, you know, there are enough intangibles to probably keep me off of this game, even though it's a power ratings play. That's kind of what I spoke to last week on the show, is that your power ratings are a guide. They're not gospel. So, yeah, the number may be there, and if you want to grab the number early in the week, you can. But like Kyle said, talking about a UCF team that hasn't played since did they play the August 26th game? Or they played, you know, they played on Thursday night or something like that. So it's been a long time since they've played.
Yeah, they played on August 31st on Thursday night. So, I mean, that's a really long break. You know, I think that's a negative. And like you just said there, I think you should use your power ratings as a guide, not gospel, like you said, because, you know, it's easy to say, well, it's 2 points off my number, 2.5 points off my number and a key number. I have to play it. You know, I'd rather look at the situation and consider all the variables rather than just straight playing those. You know, obviously, if there's enough of a difference, you have to go ahead and play it. But, you know, you got to look at the situation, and when there's so many question marks, it's a lot harder to take it.
All right, we got a listener question from Eprash Lindberg about the Alabama and Vanderbilt game, wondering how is this less than 20? And I told him, well, my number's 19.5 on it, so, you know, I'm somewhere in the range here in this one. And, you know, I do think that this is a very interesting game for a lot of different reasons, because the one thing that stood out in my mind, even though my power ratings say 19.5, I'm very tempted to play Alabama because I don't know how many points Vanderbilt needs to score to cover this number, but I'm assuming it's probably going to be something in double digits, and I don't even know if they get to that.
Yeah, my line is exactly what yours is actually too. So, you know, Bama likely takes Vanderbilt more seriously based on last week's results. And the question mark I put in my notes here is, can Vandy score here? I mean, like at all? I mean, Vanderbilt's offense is not good enough to score on this Bama defense. They're going to have to score in some fluke ways. This is going to be a really low total. You know, I don't want to say exactly, but, I mean, it's not going to be far from 40, you know, low 40s. And I don't like laying this many points in that kind of spot, but I definitely don't like the underdog here. Because like you just said, I don't think Vanderbilt can score many points. And if you think Vanderbilt's going to score something like, you know, 10 points, You know, all that takes is Bama scoring 31 and they cover, something like that. 31-10 is a very reasonable score for a game like this. Can Vanderbilt score 14 points? I doubt it.
Well, and another big thing about this game, too, and I think people need to realize this and make some adjustments in their power ratings, is that Vanderbilt has virtually no home field advantage. Because when you look at other fan bases, they will travel to Nashville. And Nashville is one of my favorite cities. I absolutely love it. Went down there for the South Carolina game last year. Stadium was pretty much half and half. I know Kansas State was very well represented last week. Alabama is going to have fans here. I mean, they have not played in Vanderbilt or at Vanderbilt since 2007. So Alabama fans are going to go to Nashville. They're going to party it up. They're going to have a lot of fun. There's virtually no home field advantage for Vanderbilt in this game. So I don't even think I would consider that. If I take that out of the equation, if I take home field advantage away altogether, my number is 22.5. So again, not a whole lot of key numbers there to look to play Alabama, but that's the thing. I mean, Vanderbilt's got to score something in this game. They're not going to lose this game 17-0. So that really worries me about this spot for the Commodores.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's a really good point you made there, is that Vanderbilt doesn't have a very good home field advantage to start with. Bama fans are obviously going to travel well. It's not that long of a trip to start with. And like you said, Nashville's a fun place to go anyway. So I think that's a really good point, that you shouldn't give them much home field advantage, if anything, here. Probably just as many Bama fans as Vandy. So in this spot, you know, I would take Bama or nothing on the side, and I would like the under or nothing as far as the total, but I think it's going to be a low total.
All right, let's talk about another 3:30 game here, and this one not a listener request. This is just one that I want to talk about. TCU and Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State, anywhere from an 11 to a 12-point favorite out there in the marketplace. I will say this. The number is 11 at Pinnacle, 11.5 at Greek, and 12 most everywhere else. So it looks to me like this is a game that's going to set up as a sharp versus public split. And I'm not surprised, because my numbers tell me to take TCU.
Yeah, my numbers tell me to take TCU as well. I will say, I got burned badly last week going against Oklahoma State. I took Pitt plus 14.5, got the best of the number, felt good about that, and then, you know, had no chance, absolutely no chance. Oklahoma State, almost 10 yards per play last week. I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, I'm a little bit hesitant to take TCU in this game after I was burned that badly last game. My numbers definitely tell me to take TCU. I'm curious to see what the public does with this number. I assume the public's going to take Oklahoma State, but how high can this number go? You know, Oklahoma State, I guess I was wrong about them. You know, I still think I trust them less than the other contenders. I still think that defense is going to be a problem at some point. But the offense is scary good. I mean, they are putting up some massive numbers. Mason Rudolph, really, really good in this system, especially now being such a veteran in it. And so many weapons around him. And, you know, you think of the passing game all the time, but Oklahoma State's a good rushing team as well. They have a lot of balance on offense. The thing is, I think TCU is going to be able to score a lot of points in this game, too. This total is going to be really high total. No way I could take the under in this game. I think TCU is going to score a lot as well. I think Oklahoma State's going to score quite a few. You know, to me, this is one of those games that I have to take TCU or nothing as far as the side, and I have to take the over or nothing as far as the total. You know, on the side, like I said, you know, I was so wrong in that game last week. I hate going against them again. I might have to. I'll have to look at this game a little farther.
I mean, this is one of those where, you know, I mean, I was high on TCU coming into the season. I wasn't the only one. I think it was a little bit higher than them or than some people on them. But for me to have this number where it's at, I mean, I need to move TCU down 10 to 12 spots in my power ratings or put Oklahoma State up in Clemson's level. And I just don't see myself doing either one of those things. I mean, yes, Oklahoma State has been exceptionally impressive. There's no doubt about that. Nobody has provided any resistance in stopping them. Okay, Tulsa's defense sucks. We know that. They just gave up, what, 54 points to Toledo, 57, whatever it was. So they weren't going to stop them. You know, we're also going with a first-time starter at quarterback. Didn't even announce the quarterback until pretty much the first drive of the game. So that's not a big surprise. South Alabama doesn't have the athletes to play with Oklahoma State. And Pitt's offense is not good. I mean, they lost Matt Canada. That didn't help them as the offensive coordinator. They lost Nathan Peterman. They lost James Conner. They've lost quite a bit. And they just got blitzed right out of the gate. And that happens sometimes. TCU is far and away the best team that Oklahoma State will have played to this point, and it's not even close. So this is one of those cases to me where it looks like Oklahoma State, they've got the impressive resume. They've done what they've needed to do. They have not been tested yet. And TCU can play with them, can run with them. This is not like the Baylor-Duke game last week where, you know, Baylor looked terrible, Duke looked great the week before. All of a sudden people are piling in on Duke to play against Baylor. There's no reason to play against TCU right now. So I think this is a number that should come down as we go throughout the week. It will be that Sharp versus Public split game, and I'll probably wind up on the Horned Frogs.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I think you and I are probably still a little bit lower on Oklahoma State than other people. I have Oklahoma State power rated 89, and I think other people must have them power ranked higher than that. You know, this is a team to me that I've had to upgrade quite a bit, but still, you know, I'm hesitant to trust Oklahoma State in that defense. I know they're going to give up a lot of yards and a lot of points throughout the Big 12 season. Obviously, they're going to score a lot of points as well, but it's hard for me to be too high on a team that I think their defense is so questionable.
I have them 88.5. I've got Alabama 98.5, Clemson 94, USC 93, Oklahoma 92.5, Ohio State, Washington, Penn State. I can't put Oklahoma State ahead of any of those top seven teams. They're eighth in my power ratings. I think that's a good spot for them. I think the value is decent. I probably am too high on TCU, but that was a preseason position that I took. And like I said, I haven't seen any reason to deviate from that position. You know, I mean, we'll see. I mean, maybe I'm going to be wrong on this game, but I think this is a spot where Oklahoma State does meet some resistance. I think talking heads and the betting public are going to be surprised. And I think sharper players are going to go, yeah, they finally played somebody.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think there's no question it's going to be a sharp public split. If you want to be on the side of the sharps, you take TCU. If you want to be on the public, you take Oklahoma State. Having said that, you know, Oklahoma State proved the sharps wrong last week. Can they do it again here? We'll see.
Plus, Gary Patterson can coach, man. I know that TCU had a bad year last year, but that dude can coach, and he'll be ready. I mean, you know, people are going to look at that SMU game last week and say, oh, TCU gave up 35 or whatever it was. I mean, yeah, they scored 55 in a classic look-ahead spot. So, I don't know. We'll see. We'll have to see how that one plays out, and especially how the movement goes in the market. All right, Michigan and Purdue. Here's a hell of a game to talk about as well. Michigan laying 9.5 or 10. Sharper books, 9.5. More public books sitting at 10. Not a big surprise here with this one. This would not be a number that was 9.5 or 10 3 weeks ago, that's for sure.
Oh, no way. This is a fascinating game. This is one that I can't bet on, but I definitely want to watch. My line's 10 for this game. I feel like it's hard because you can't overreact to what Purdue's done so far because it's only been a few games. But it's obvious the coaching change has done wonders for them. Michigan's definitely better in the trenches than Purdue, but I'm not confident in Michigan's offense scoring a bunch. You know, I think Spate's less than stellar at quarterback. You know, he made a lot of mistakes in last week's game. I had the over in the Air Force and Michigan game last week, lost that one because Michigan couldn't do anything once they got to the red zone and, you know, kick field goals every single time. And, you know, Spate just was not impressive at all in that game, and I think he's a kind of a game manager. Purdue's offense is much improved. You know, Braun is a tremendous coach. The question mark here is, you know, can Purdue compete in the trenches? You know, I think this is really a fascinating game, like I said, because, you know, my line being 10 right now, obviously right in line with the market, so I have no strong lean here. You know, I really wouldn't want to take Purdue and attend that badly just because it's, you know, a big step up playing Michigan. But on the other hand, I certainly don't want to lay 10 with Michigan either because I don't trust their offense. So, I don't know. This is a tough game to handicap, a very fascinating game as far as the fan, though.
I've got this one 13.5. So, I may wind up playing Michigan at the 9.5, you know, if there's one of those out there. And here's the thing. So, there are a couple of things that I want to say about this game. The first is that I had that Purdue-Louisville game lined at 20, and it closed, what, 26, 26.5, something like that. So I haven't been as aggressive on Purdue because I felt like I was already a little bit higher on them than the market at that point in time. They beat Ohio. Okay, you know, Ohio is a MAC team. They're a decent MAC team, but they're not a great team. Missouri, huge problems firing their defensive coordinator. They don't really seem to know what's up, what's down, anything like that right now. This is the most physical team that Purdue will play to this point, is a team that can run the football down their throat. Louisville has no running game. Louisville's running game is Lamar Jackson. They don't have a great running game. Now they're facing a team that can actually line it up and run it at them. And they haven't really had a team that can do that to them to this point. Plus, Michigan, very good defensively. Defensive line is very strong. This should be a game where, you know, David Blough gets pressured a little bit. And I just think this is one of those spots where you look at this game and you kind of say, okay, Purdue's better, but I don't think they're good enough yet. You know, people may be down on Michigan for not covering against Air Force last week. I don't know why Power 5 teams schedule triple option teams. I will never understand that. Cincinnati game was a letdown coming off of the Florida win at a neutral site. I think now that Big Ten play begins, and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, Michigan hasn't won a Big Ten title. They haven't even won the Big Ten East since Harbaugh got there. So Big Ten play is a big deal for them. They've got a bye week before they play the in-state rival Michigan State game. I think this is a good spot for Michigan, honestly. And I think this is one of those where Purdue comes back to earth a little bit.
I think it's a good spot for Michigan as well. You know, the thing I will say about Purdue is their defense has impressed me quite a bit, considering who they've played. You know, I know Missouri has a lot of problems, but the fact that Missouri only had 203 yards of offense is pretty stunning. You know, it seems like they should have been able to get a lot more offense than that against Purdue. That was interesting. Purdue's defense is ranked right in the middle of the pack as far as total defense, despite the fact that they had to play against Louisville and Missouri, which is obviously an SEC team. I know they have issues, but, you know, Purdue's defense has impressed me quite a bit, especially compared to what we've been used to with Purdue. And then, obviously, their offense is much improved. Having said that, I agree with you. I think this is a better spot for Michigan than it is Purdue. Michigan, much stronger in the trenches. I think that's probably where they win this game.
To be fair, though, I mean, great point about Purdue's defense. But also, I mean, if Purdue finds a way to win this game outright, somehow it won't surprise me. So while I think it can be one of those spots where Michigan, you know, reminds Purdue that they're not quite there yet, I mean, Purdue may just be on that kind of trend. Jeff Brom may just be that good. And so, you know, it'll be an interesting game to watch, like you said, and something where you can gather a lot of information for the future. All right, let's get into this pick six segment, six games, rapid fire fashion. Let's start with a neutral site game here. This one between Texas A&M takes on Arkansas in a neutral site game at AT&T Stadium. Texas A&M favored by 2.5.
I don't want anything to do with this game at all.
Apparently neither do I since I couldn't talk about it. So.
Right. Apparently neither one of us want anything to do with this game. I don't trust either coach. I don't trust either team. I guess I'll take Arkansas just for the purposes of this show, but I'm definitely not betting this game.
I've got Arkansas -2 with the adjustments that I've made to Texas A&M, so there's maybe a little bit of line value, but I'd have to catch 3 or higher on Arkansas to feel confident in it. But like I said, I mean, obviously I stuttered my way through that game, so clearly I, at my core, don't want any part of it. How about this one? Miami of Ohio takes on Central Michigan. Central Michigan, a 2.5-point favorite. Miami completely choked that game and my middle away last week against Cincinnati. Do they bounce back this week?
Yeah, I followed the end of that game when you said something about getting a middle. I thought, man, you just – that was a rough beat for good opportunity to get a middle, definitely. Miami really should have won that game. You know, this is a tough one because I don't think Central Michigan's that good. I think Miami's better than they showed last week. I'll go ahead and take Miami in a bounce-back spot here.
I like Miami in this spot, too. I kind of want – the Central Michigan thing's weird. I mean, like, they're throwing for, like, 400 yards a game all of a sudden. It's crazy. I'm kind of surprised with everything that's going on there with Central Michigan. But I do like Miami of Ohio. I like them coming into the season, and I like them in this spot as well. How about this one? In North Carolina, this is a sneaky good game this week. Wake Forest is a 4-point road favorite against Appalachian State.
Yeah, this is a really sneaky game. App State was not impressive at all last week, and I think that has something to do with this number. You know, Clawson's done a really good job with Wake Forest. We've talked about him before. He's a good coach. Still, I don't want to lay 4 points here with Wake Forest in this one. I'll take the home underdog here.
Yeah, I would take the home underdog here too. I mean, App State is good. I mean, App State is a better team than Boston College to me. They're certainly a better team than Utah State. I know Wake Forest has looked impressive, and the offensive numbers are what's really been impressive, but I also don't think that they've really been tested yet. So I like Appalachian State in this one, and this is one of those, if you do want to take the plus four, I would definitely recommend sprinkling on the money line because there could be something to that as well. Let's go with another 3:30 game here. Southern Cal laying 16.5 on the road against Cal.
I'm going to take Cal. This is not a strong lean. You know, I think this one will probably get to 17. So if you like Cal, go ahead and wait this one out, I would say. USC, not very good last week. You could say this is a bounce-back spot for them. I still don't think that they believe Cal is very good, even despite Cal's record. And, you know, I think this could be a little bit of a lazy game for USC. I think USC wins, but I'd rather take the home underdog.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that this is one of those spots, especially, too, with Justin Wilcox and the way that the Cal defense has looked. Plus, he's been able to prepare for USC a few times in the past. So I think that kind of gives them a little bit of a leg up in terms of keeping this one close. And I also agree with you about this number getting to 17, though, ironically, it's already 17 at Pinnacle. So it looks like USC is this a situation where USC is the sharp side, or is this the sharp segments of the market getting in front of the number because they know USC money is coming and they can play back on Cal later in the week?
Yeah, I think that's probably a good chance that it's a numbers grab and they go back to the other side later in the week.
All right. How about this? This is going to be a game that's going to stand out. And I guarantee if you looked at the card to see which games I give you for the pick six, you probably picked up on this one. San Diego State, only a 3.5-point favorite on the road in Colorado Springs against Air Force.
Yeah, I think this one was 3 a few minutes ago, and it's gone back up to 3.5. Started at 4.5, movement down to 3, back up to 3.5. Really interesting game here. I'm going to take San Diego State. I know it's not a good spot for them. It's not the ideal spot by far. I think Air Force has lost so much on defense from the past that I think San Diego State's going to be able to run the ball consistently on them. You know, Penny, I watched that game the other night against Stanford. Penny is a really good running back. I think he's going to be an NFL running back, and I don't think this Air Force defense can stop him enough. I like San Diego State defending the triple option. I'll take San Diego State here.
You know, I don't know if you want to give this away because I don't know if you're going to have a play on San Diego State, but my power ratings have this game at like 10, and that's with Air Force having a good home field advantage there in the altitude in Colorado Springs. It feels to me like this line is an overreaction to the concept of a letdown spot with what San Diego State did last week against Stanford. Like, that's not worth 4 or 5 points to me, I don't think. So I would have to take San Diego State from a numbers standpoint, but, man, is that a tricky and dangerous game.
Yeah, I'm not going to say exactly what my number is, but what I will say is this is definitely my favorite play of the ones that I've given here in the pick six.
All right. And there are so many primetime games I could have talked about, so many different angles in a lot of these games. Florida and Kentucky is interesting. Penn State and Iowa is interesting, especially with the line move that we're seeing there. But let's talk about this one between Washington and Colorado. Washington's a 10-point favorite on the road against the Colorado team that's lost a lot on defense, but it feels like this is still giving them a little bit of respect.
Yeah, I was sitting over here expecting you to talk about, you know, I could give you all these big games, and I was expecting like FIU and Rice or something. So you surprised me with what's still a good game. But I'm going to take Washington here. You know, I know Colorado's been good so far this year, but I think Washington outclasses them in this game. I think there's a spot in the season where Colorado's lack of talent compared to their opponents is going to show up. I think Colorado's a well-coached team. Having said that, I think Washington's is an even better coach team. Chris Peterson, really, really good coach. I think Washington wins this one by more than 10.
Yeah, this is one of those games that on a lesser scale, it's sort of like Oklahoma State in the sense that Colorado finally plays somebody. I mean, I know that Colorado State played them tough. It's a rivalry game. Texas State is terrible. I think they're 128 in my power ratings. Then Northern Colorado, obviously an FCS team. So this is a barometer. This is a litmus test for Colorado. And like you, I think that they probably do wind up failing that. So I would take Washington in this spot as well. All right, we've made it to the end. So many more games that we could have talked about. We'll try to cover a lot of them here as we go throughout the week on the shows. But you got an exclusive free pick for our show listeners here?
I do. Last week's free pick was an unfortunate loser. Tulane, I actually took that as a premium at plus 35.5. That one should have covered. It didn't. Those kind of things happen. I will have to say I didn't like very much that Oklahoma threw an 87-yard touchdown pass up by 35 points with 2 minutes left. But what do you do? We'll go with the free pick this week. This time I'm going to be on the favorite. I'm going to take West Virginia minus 20. I think Kansas is completely overmatched here. Greer's a really good fit for this offense. If you look at Kansas, you know, Kansas' defense has been terrible. Kansas was beaten a lot worse than last week's score indicated in that game. And I think the Mountaineers can really blow them out in this game. I think it's a good matchup for West Virginia. I'll take West Virginia minus 20.
At this point, Kansas fans are just wondering when basketball season starts, which, I mean, generally by this point in time, that's probably about the time they start asking that question. So I think you're on the right track there. I do have, from a power rating standpoint, I have this number lower. But from a matchup standpoint, I can't see Kansas hanging in that game. Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. What's going on over there at the website right now?
Sign up for the newsletter there at huntersportspicks.com. Two free play winners this past weekend. Now 51 and 23 in my last 74 free plays sent out. So sign up for that at huntersportspicks.com at the top of the page. Also, the Sharp Money Report, which goes out every Friday, gives you a look at who the sharps are on, sharp public splits, things like that for college football and the NFL. For this week only, it's going to be $79 for the rest of the year. You can contact me, Kyle at Hunter Sports Picks, or at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter if you're interested in that. And that'll go through the rest of the football season.
Well, great show, man. We covered a lot of different stuff. Thank you so much for joining me, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, sounds good. Thanks.
Good stuff there with Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. Again, running long here on this Monday show, but it is what it is, man. When you come out of the weekends with so much college football and NFL, you got so much to catch up on, and we try to do that here on this Monday show, and we can't even get to all of it, but we're going to try anyway. Coming up on our Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll hear from Sports Cheetah, this week's Hunting for Winners segment. Plenty of stuff to obviously talk about with him. I know that I just got a listener question about Mississippi State and Georgia. We'll talk about that one with him, as well as several other games and several other things out there in the betting market. Wednesday's edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll hear from Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Thursday, Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com and Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment with Sports Cheetah, and then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook with the Odds Report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.